TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Let's go!
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Previous segment was brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked. Well done. Gentlemen, let's take some time back at the week that was in the life of the Winnipeg Jets. It's been just under a week since the home opener against Montreal. And as time tends to do, it gives us some perspective. You know, what were the overriding thought that you had regarding the spectacle of last Sunday? Less so the on-ice performance, which was obviously a little bit disappointing, but the spectacle surrounding the event. What really jumped out at you?
I thought it was an unbelievable day. Me and Richie got together, and then you met up with us slightly before we went on air at 9 o'clock in the morning. But we were there, Richie, for, I think, 12 hours when all was said and done. And I thought it was an unbelievable day, like, to see everyone there early on in the day, getting together. We were at Moxie's earlier in the day. It was unbelievable. You know, the Jets got a standing ovation with 1 minute to go, even though the score was 5-1. It was a lot of fun. It was a very historic day, and you know, you'll never forget that. And I felt lucky to be part of it, even though, you know, we've got the radio show and all that. I felt, you know, really lucky to be part of it, because I knew that there were hundreds of thousands of fans that would like to be, you know, in that arena. So I'll never forget how loud it was. I'll never forget, you know, the cheer that the Jets got throughout the game, and, you know, when they were being introduced at the beginning. So for me, it lived up to all the hype, Drew.
Yeah, it was a memorable night, Drew. I mean, it's hard to describe, really, the feeling and the excitement. I don't know if I've ever felt that excitement level on the streets of Winnipeg before, prior to the game.
Yeah, that was sort of, I mean,
it was as if some kind of, you know, as if a historic event was happening, which it was, and you were able to, we were on the air till 12, and then we had a bite to eat at Moxie's there, and then we went outside, and that really captured it all for me. It was the feeling outside, just on the streets.
Just the swarms of people
everywhere. Yeah, just swarms of people. But you could just feel the excitement level. You could just feel it. And I really, I thought that if you were there, or anywhere really in the city, the feeling from probably, you know, the time you woke up, even started, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, I just couldn't wait for it. And the event happens, and It was an incredible day. Not just evening, day.
You know, but we've all been in Calgary or Montreal, or in Drew's case, Ottawa or Toronto or Vancouver or whatever during the 15 years that the Jets weren't here, and there is a palpable buzz when the NHL when an NHL game is on, a home game is in that city. And you know, when the Moose were here, there was a buzz, but it's not the same thing. Now that the Jets are back, you actually feel the excitement and the energy. And the energy in the city, I have to say, is unbelievable. You know, we were at the cheer on Thursday night for the Hawks game, and it's just unbelievable. It's just fun to be in Winnipeg now. I've always loved living here and always been a fan of the city and a supporter of the city and all that. But now that the Jets are back, it's really exciting and fun to be part of each and every game, whether it's home or away.
It's a common goal. It's that, for the most part, with respect to hockey, everybody sits and talks to their friends, right?
Right.
And you watch games together. You watch the Cup. Everybody watches the hockey games, but nobody really cares about the same team, aside from the Olympics every 4 years. In Winnipeg, at least, we didn't have that. Now, if friends are going to watch a game, you're all rooting for the same team. You all have you all care what happens. And just going on the streets on Monday, all everybody wants to talk about is the game, and it's great. It gives people something to talk about.
Did you think that the opening, in the arena, the opening, the intro of the team, did you think it was a little low-key? A little too low-key? How about that?
Personally?
Yeah, I'm asking you personally.
I thought it was a little bit low-key. I would have liked to have seen the former Jets introduced on the ice, but maybe I'm in the minority there. I just was wondering why they weren't brought out for an ovation. That's what I would have liked to have seen, but...
Yeah, and
I'm not sure if they're planning on having them back one by one or whatever it may be, but I just thought in that moment, like a guy like Dale Hawerchuk, for all he did for the city for about 10 years, would have been nice for the city to give him, with that excitement level, to give him an ovation. Keith Tkachuk coming back, you know, these guys, I think, flew on their own dime to Winnipeg. Winnipeg, you know, that's what they care about. Winnipeg is means a lot to them. And Would have been nice, and Thomas Steen, same thing. It would have been nice to have these guys on the ice and one by one, kind of like the Habs do it. And I love the way the Habs do it with their history, because if not for those players, we're not here today talking about the Jets. We're just not. I mean, if not for Bobby Hall, we're not here talking about the Jets. If not for the owners before, we're not here talking about the Jets. Whatever it may be, I mean...
Are they running away from the Jets 2.0? Are they running away from it unnecessarily?
You know what, I'll step in here first, and we're answering this, you know, personally. We're not speaking for anyone else. I think they are a little bit. This is a different franchise, and it's not just, you know, legally. It's a different franchise because it's a different ownership group, a different arena, and... You know, True North is running the Jets, I think, exclusive of the old Jets. There is some homage, but it's been subdued, and that's their prerogative. They True North is the new ownership group, and they're more than welcome, and you know, have rightful to do so.
This is the thing. You know, people will say, most people say, well, the team's history is in Phoenix. I disagree with that.
No, it's all in Winnipeg.
The record book might say
but even that, Drew, it's the memories. It's like saying Jim Brown's history is in Baltimore.
Sure.
What does that even mean? It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, did Jim Brown play for the Cleveland Browns, right? The Browns ended up moving to Baltimore. Baltimore had a team. The Cleveland Browns came back under new ownership. Art Modell owns the Ravens, and I think it's Art Lerner now owns the Browns. It's like saying the history is there, and we can't honor the history yet. And I just don't. That argument to me doesn't carry much weight.
There is no Winnipeg Jets history in Phoenix. As far as I'm concerned, you move, everything stays in Winnipeg.
With Atlanta and the Thrashers.
All the
history's there.
Jets memories were in the Winnipeg Arena. It's that simple. There's nothing anywhere in Arizona that's the Winnipeg Jets. It's all the Phoenix Coyotes. As far as I'm concerned, this debate, you know, was one of the main reasons why people wanted this team to be called the Winnipeg Jets, and Mark Chipman ended up calling it the Winnipeg Jets because of that history. And now it's a new franchise, but we're still called the Jets. So as far as I'm concerned, it's tough. I mean, look around, and it's all Winnipeg Jets jerseys.
How bizarre will it be tonight in Phoenix when Dale Hawerchuk's number is hanging up in the rafters?
Drew, I meant to say old Winnipeg Jets jerseys. Yeah. And I mean, the nostalgia is, I think, a huge reason why people have supported this team. The Manitoba Moose and the job that True North has done is part of that. Don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
The Manitoba Moose were the job that Mark Chipman did with the Manitoba Moose, and all of True North did with Manitoba Moose, and his vision for running that team like an NHL team factors into it. But especially an older generation that maybe didn't go to as many Moose games as Jets games, when Mark Chipman brought the NHL back, people said, oh, I can't wait to support an NHL That's team right. like I did 15 years ago, 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
I think a lot of there's a misnomer out there that the people who supported the Moose weren't necessarily Jets fans, and they were just their own that these are mutually exclusive group for the most part.
I think it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. I spoke to somebody, a relative of mine who worked for the team right after the Jets left, selling tickets. He said that when they were selling tickets, they were going through the Jets list.
Sure.
He said a lot of the people who purchased it were Jets season ticket holders. So I don't necessarily think these are two different groups that exist. No. And people who just, you know, some people didn't get AHL tickets after the NHL. You know what? It's their prerogative. It's their money. And they spent years and years and years pouring their heart into the Jets. And they didn't want to buy the Moose product. And they might have ended up buying it later, or they didn't.
I don't think there were AHL hockey fans and NHL hockey fans in the city. I think there's hockey fans in the city. And
I agree.
And people choose to spend their disposable income however they choose to do so. But I don't think that... You know, I don't think that they're two mutually exclusive groups. I mean, we know that the people that bought Jets tickets were Moose season ticket holders.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we know that the people, you know, when people bought Moose tickets, they were probably Jets season ticket holders.
And even though now we're you know, we get our media passes and we're not ticket holders, even though, you know...
I'm a ticket holder.
Well,
speak for yourself.
Okay, but you're ticket holders, but, you know, the point being that we also are now in the media. It's a little bit different. We're not fans. We're in that building. But we all supported the Moose. I went to dozens of games, playoff. And the point isn't for people to have to defend themselves.
That's right.
About whether they went to the Moose. We, you know, me and Richie were coaching last year. We went to the World Under-17 Challenge. We've been to Canada versus Russia Super Series. There's a lot of hockey in that building. World Junior Exhibition
That's
Games.
Right. Hockey fans.
Women's World Championship.
That's right.
They're all hockey fans. You're right, Drew. You nailed it. And The point being, you know, this is a business now. True North is running an NHL team, and they're making certain business decisions whether they want to honor the Jets a little bit too much. Not at all. I mean, that's something that really is their decision, and it's maybe up to us to make the comments, because it's definitely food for thought going ahead. Let's be honest, though, the intro was on, about honoring Rick Rippon, which is something they're going to do for forever. It's not something they're only going to do this year wearing that the Rick Rippon sticker, yeah. But it's Rick Rippon will always be with the Jets. So they went with I wouldn't say it's low-key, they went with a certain decision to honor him, and you can't call that low key.
You could do both, though.
Yeah, and that was the question: could they have done both?
You know, they had that great video.
You can do both.
Great video, and I think that I think that there's more to that video that they just didn't capitalize on. I don't know if they plan on capitalizing on throughout the season.
I think that the moment, the excitement. I mean, the excitement level won't be what it was that night.
Yeah, you're saying it'll never be like that. Even though the MTS Center
the team
wins
a cup,
is going to be loud.
Hopefully it'll be a cup, yeah. And then hopefully yeah. The team will be in the Stanley Cup Finals. And it'll be like that. But I just don't think so, Drew. So if you were to, you know, you bring Hawerchuk. Now Hawerchuk's coaching Barry. I don't know how you bring him in, but you bring in one of the former guys on a Saturday against Carolina next week. Well, it's
nice, but it's not the same.
It's Carolina on a Saturday. It's hockey. We're not the normal group of people who aren't crazy diehard hockey fans. I mean,
right.
It's still Carolina. Will the anticipation be there? I don't know. Will people get, you know what I mean, Drew? If they don't know, people might not get there on time because...
Well, you know, it's an interesting... We just got a tweet from Hustler down in... Hustler's in
Glendale.
In Glendale. You'll hear from him coming up right when we're done at 3 o'clock. So, actually, I'm impressed Hustler's awake already. But he said, are you guys joking? The NHL history of the first Jets was a complete embarrassment. Opening night, sure not the time to go there.
I
don't disagree that it was a complete embarrassment.
Why was it an embarrassment?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to ask Andrew about that. I mean, at some point,
Andrew. I don't know Hustler.
I don't disagree. I disagree vehemently. I don't know, because you're in a division with, they made their mistakes. Lots of teams have, but you're in a division with the Oilers and the Flames, arguably two of the greatest teams of all time. I want you to go back and watch forget the '80s Oilers, which may be the greatest team of all time. Look at the '80s Flames roster. And you'll know how good the Oilers were because they used to beat that team all the time.
And they won their Stanley Cup in 1989. But
that's right.
I happen to think that, and this is maybe, you know, Winnipeg has always had this, Winnipeg as a whole has had this reputation of being self-deprecating and having an inferiority complex to whether it's Toronto or Montreal. Yeah. But as far as I'm concerned, people look back and have this revisionist opinion of what the Jets were, and they came into the league and were horrible. And they struggled in that division with the Oilers and the Flames. Hold on, I just want to say one thing. They struggled with in that division and didn't have success. They only won one playoff round or two.
Let me get in here, Ezzy, quickly. Okay, and I'll finish your point. 83, Oilers make the Stanley Cup Finals. 84, they make the Finals. 85, they make the Finals. 86, Calgary makes the Finals. 87, Oilers make the Finals. 88, Oilers make the Finals. 89, Calgary makes the Finals. 90, Oilers make the Finals.
Where was the opportunity for the Jets, is what you're saying.
But think about that.
People would say that, that means they stunk. But no.
Exactly.
Dale Hawerchuk was one of the best players in the league. And when you look at the early 90s, and then you have Timu coming, the Jets were only here for 17 years. They weren't here for 50 years. And when you look at the players that they started to bring in 91, 92, the Timo Solanis, the Alexei Zamenhofs, they had some pretty good hockey teams. I don't think that you can say as a whole, even though, Hustler's is just tweeting at us, I don't think as a whole the first incarnation of the Winnipeg Jets were an embarrassment at all. I think there was a lot of good hockey played by the Winnipeg Jets, and that didn't necessarily translate into a lot of playoff round wins.
They ran into buzzsaws each and every year.
Who did the Edmonton Oilers beat up night in and night out? The Winnipeg Jets.
But they beat up talented Jets teams.
They beat up the entire league. That's what Richie's saying.
And they're six, I just ran off 8 years. Six of those 8 years, those teams won the cup.
Yeah.
Let's leave it there. Let's go to break. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day. Our Twitter war with Andrew Hustler-Patterson continues unabated. He says maybe they should have honored the old Jets by having 4,000 empty seats and having half the building cheering for the Habs.
Yeah, well, people have to understand something. You know, you look around the NHL now and all the Canadian buildings are sold out, right?
Yeah. Wasn't the case back in the early 90s, late 80s.
Did Edmonton now, you know, did... All those teams sell out all the time. Do Vancouver sell out? Let's look at the context. Where do the Jets rank in terms of attendance in the league? Show me that. And show me if it was an embarrassing attendance of performance. That's what I want to see.
It's funny.
And
though,
don't use the last year when everybody knew they were leaving. Like, they were gone. Everybody knew they were leaving. So don't use that year. That needs to be kicked out. It's like using the Coyotes now for the course of their existence. You don't use last season when they were supposed to be leaving because nobody went.
The
People
Jets
thought they were gone.
If you go back and look, the Jets attendance in the late 80s and early 90s was significantly better than it was in 1995-96. And they did get sellouts throughout their 17 years, including, I believe, the last game at Winnipeg Arena, the last regular season game was a sellout. The last playoff game was definitely a sellout. So, you know what? I'm not drinking that Kool-Aid. The Jets' 12,000 fans that they got in 1996 was twice as many fans as Phoenix and Atlanta got last year.
And Dallas had last night. And also, one other thing, you know, in terms of the Habs fans, well, I mean, that's just like saying going to a Toronto Blue Jays game and seeing all the Yankees fans. The Yankees, the Red Sox, more so the Yankees.
They have fans everywhere.
They have fans everywhere.
They have
it's
fans
a generation.
Because
like back in the 70s, 60s, nobody had any games. All the games were on with Habs, the games. That doesn't really last as much as, you know, that's more prevalent then than it is now.
And I'd like to see someone argue with what I'm about to say. You could count the number of Montreal Canadiens fans on one hand. There were not a lot of Habs jerseys in that arena.
No.
It was 10-1 Jets jerseys.
Oh, way more 10-1. Maybe 10,000-1. There were like six Habs jerseys there. Anyway, let's go to the hotline, or let's go to the Legal Curve phone line. I think we have Zach calling from Toronto. Zach, welcome back to the program.
Hello.
Zach, it's been like 2 months.
Listen, I don't know what time you guys were on during the summer. I was calling in the mornings. I was getting some weird ESPN radio thing. Like, well, I'm glad we finally settled down and found a great time slot here on Saturday afternoons.
Yeah, we're on Saturday mornings next week.
Oh, God.
just because of the Bomber game next week, it happens to be a rarity. 9 to noon next week, but normally noon to 3. Zach, what, you want to talk about Dustin Byfuglien? What did I understand?
No. I want to stay on topic of what you guys are talking about.
Okay, right. Let's hear it.
Do it.
So I just want to say, being a Winnipegger who is in exile out in Toronto here, the one thing that I've noticed is that the Jets coming back, and something I noticed from watching the game on Thursday, it has energized all the Winnipeggers and all the former Winnipeggers and the people who have a connection to Winnipeg, and everybody's sort of united. And I think you'll see tonight there'll be a lot of Winnipeg fans in Phoenix, and even during the game in Chicago on Thursday, you could hear Go Jets, Go Chants during points of that game.
Well, Zach, you know what? It's a good point because you live in Toronto, and, you know, I've been in Montreal, and it's cliche for people in Toronto and Montreal to dump on Winnipeg. I mean, you expect it. You expect people to say, oh, I've never been to Winnipeg. Where's Winnipeg? So it's something that galvanizes people. I think you're bang on. You can't bash us anymore and say that we don't have an NHL team anymore, right?
No, not at all. And I mean, last night I went out to this charity event, and I had a Winnipeg Jets tie on.
Really?
And you wouldn't believe the amount of Winnipeggers who came out to me and said, hey, Winnipeg. Like, I met people who went to Kelvin High School and the Collegian, people I never would have met before, but they're out there. And it's something that, you know, I think something really special is happening with the Winnipeg Jets, and looking at what True North is doing with their marketing. And I think you're going to see that they're going to become one of those national brands now that they're reborn and they've got all this momentum behind them this season.
Zach, appreciate the call, bud. Keep on listening.
All right. Thanks, guys. Keep up.
Thanks, Zach.
780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. Based on the responses we've gotten on our Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Hustler might not want to come back from Phoenix.
What?
Oh, there's people who are...
Is that Hustler on the line?
That's not Hustler.
I think that's Zach's dial tone.
Yeah, let's hear some comments. Let's hear the Twitter world.
Just, you know, lots of guys, is Hustler nuts, you know, great, great Jets teams, things of that nature. Just people really who love the old Jets who aren't really understanding his logic. We've opened up open invitation to Hustler to come on and defend his position, of course.
You know, Drew,
Huss knows how to get in touch with us.
We've opened a can of gummy worms.
We obviously love Huss, and he's stirring the pot a little bit. He used to work for the Winnipeg Jets, and he's the biggest, you know, fan of the Jets. But I think as far as I'm concerned, I understand people's arguments, but I don't buy into the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 being a failure at all. Yeah, okay, they left, but that was the entire climate, the arena, the ownership situation, the low Canadian dollar, that had more to do with it than the fans. The fans left because the writing was on the wall. The Jets were going to leave. You could just see it. The NHL was going to Southern southern United States. So now everything's come full circle. Our economy's doing well. Paul Waldy of the Globe and Mail, who we had on approximately 50 minutes ago, wrote about this. Now, you know, our economy's strong. We have a new arena. We have some of the wealthiest owners in the NHL. It's totally different.
Wealthy industrialists.
Yeah.
Penny Packer on Seinfeld. Another good comment on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, from Ohad Raffaele, says, you know, the Winnipeg Jets existed before the 79-80 season. Respect the WHA team.
Absolutely.
And that's a fair point. Because you got to remember, the Jets were bad in the NHL. When they were bad in the NHL, it's only as a result of the NHL forcing them, the team, to be dismantled. Because they would have dominated. I mean, they potentially could have dominated the NHL.
And the Canadian quote in the Randy Turner book was, back in the bigs, which again you should definitely go out and get right away. I think the St. Louis owner is saying, we can't allow this team to be, how do we justify allowing this team into the league if they can beat us as they are?
And Richie, did that not set them back 3, 4, 5 years?
Oh yeah, longer than
that. To play a team, I mean, the Atlanta Thrashers became the Winnipeg Jets. They didn't get players taken away from them. Certain players weren't re-signed. But
it's politics, as you have to understand that, like, the Jets teams those days, Hull, Hedrick, Nilsson, they arguably could have beat any other teams in the NHL. I mean, embarrassing for the NHL for a rival team to beat them.
The only team that they're, the Russian Red Army was unbelievable as a hockey team. The only team they lost to were the Winnipeg Jets.
They were also unbelievable as an army, weren't they?
Yes, I was speaking more about the specific hockey team, but yeah, that's true. They were unbelievable as a hockey as an army as well. I mean, it's just, you know, it certainly is true that the Winnipeg Jets of the WHA would have been competitive against every single NHL team and probably at the top of the heap of the NHL potentially.
You know, Drew, we had a two-segment interview with Randy Turner on Sunday at the home opener, and we talked to him about this. And I think we were all emphatic in agreeing on this. The WHA Jets and the impact they had and the fact that they weren't allowed to become the NHL Jets has been completely forgotten as far as I'm concerned in the overall scope of the hockey world.
Let's go. I think we have a caller on line one. Hank is calling from St. James. Hank, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, guys. I just want to say, I was at the game, and there was a fellow, I'll tell you, a different mentality than what it used to be.
Right.
He bought beers for everybody on the row.
That must have cost him about $200. Yeah, $200 easy.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I said, well, what's going on? And he said, no, this is for everybody. And I think the difference was, too.
Can you send him to my row next game?
Yeah, no kidding. But I think the other point is that now if you're spending, you know, $5 for a Pepsi or $6.57 for a beer, you know it's going towards the team.
Yeah.
Going towards Winnipeg Enterprise, which had nothing really to do with the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, that was just a political sideshow.
Yep.
Like you said, I mean, the arena wasn't made for concerts. It was terrible. Now you have a first-class, entertainment place that, you know, we all can be proud of, you know, really. And it's, as you can see, it's, you know, in the top 10 of having busiest. So I think it's totally, I've never seen so many people, like I'm Italian, but I've never seen so many people, other ethnicity, with Jets jerseys on. They don't even know the game. And they're wearing them.
It's trendy. It's trendy, Hank.
Yeah, it's incredible. I just, and then the new stadium. Somebody, a guy, a construction worker, came to my business, gave me a poster of the new stadium for the Bombers. And I mean, you just look at that and say, wow, this is incredible.
Hank, you're bang on about Winnipeg Enterprises, and I think you're bang on all points. And I think that I think we go here.
Hank, appreciate the call.
I have a 6-year-old, you know, and she, that's all she wants is a Jets jersey.
Hank, appreciate the call. We're right up against the break.
Mark costs you $300 every time.
Good call.
Anyways, have a good day, guys.
Thanks, Hank.
Okay, great show. Bye.
Appreciate the call very much. Let's go right up. We're up against the break. Let's head to it right now. This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. On the other side, Mike Colligan from Hockey Writers and Forbes.com is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day. We're going to be joined on the line by Mike Colligan of Forbes.com and the Hockey Writers momentarily. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. The Twitter address is twitter.com/illegalcurve, Illegal Curve, if you want to send us a message. Facebook.com/illegalcurve. And the website, of course, is www.illegalcurve.com. Apparently, we have Mike Colligan on the line.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Mike Colligan, Forbes.com, the Hockey Writers. Welcome back to the program. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great, guys. It's good to be talking some real hockey there in Winnipeg. I think the last time I was on, the team wasn't quite there yet, but it's got to be exciting couple of days and a few weeks for you guys, right?
Oh, the excitement has not diminished one iota since, I guess, mid-May when the announcement sort of first started to occur, and then May 31st when it was officially made. You know, I bet you Penguins fans are equally excited to see Sidney Crosby back on game action. Any sort of timeline now that he's been cleared for contact?
Well, the team certainly is not committing to any timeline. I think they don't want to put any date out there that people can hold them to. And I think they don't want to put any pressure on Crosby as well. And, you know, Crosby's kind of just really focused on taking this one step at a time. And it's cliche, but just talking to him, that's all he's worried about is what's tomorrow going to bring. And he claims he hasn't had any symptoms since the start of training camp. So that's certainly a good sign. And now he's been cleared for 100% full contact in practice. So I think we're looking at probably a couple of weeks. I think, you know, with all the media scrutiny around this situation, the doctors and everyone involved, they're not going to want to rush this. And when you look at the Penguins have not lost a game in regulation yet this season, there's really no reason to rush getting them back in the lineup. They're winning, and in the big picture, these games are pretty meaningless. So I think we're probably looking at a couple of weeks, and they go on the road at the end of October, and I think they'll maybe try and bring them back for a home game. So I think early November is probably where I would target it. But like I said, nothing official from the team and just taking it one day at a time.
Mike, Chris Kunitz resigned this week for 3.725 per year. Do you want to, you know, give our listeners a little bit of background on that and whether you think that's a good deal?
Well, sure. Chris Kunitz came over a couple years ago in a trade deadline deal with Anaheim, and Ryan Whitney went the other way, and the Penguins acquired Kunitz and Eric Tangrady, who is a prospect that's still trying to work his way through the system. But Kunitz has been a pretty sick player, especially on Crosby's wing, and that was always the criticism for the first few years of Crosby's career, was that he just didn't have a real goal scorer on his wing to finish the plays. And I think that's what they were thinking they were getting in Kunitz, was a guy that can really add some top-end, top-line skill. He had 23 goals last year, and so the Penguins, they like what they've seen from him. He's a real physical guy. And, you know, he's listed at 6 foot. I think that's maybe a little generous. Mm-hmm. And my concern would be at 5'11", 190 pounds, playing a real physical power forward game, you know, how much time does he have? And I think that's where the Penguins didn't want to lock themselves in too long with a guy like Kunitz. They like what they have. They like him with Crosby, but they gave him a two-year deal for $3.75 million a year, and that's exactly what he was making before. And from talking to him, it was a pretty quick process, a couple weeks of just back and forth, and both sides were interested in putting this in the past. And so it sounds like it went pretty well, and it kind of locks up the Penguins roster for next year. Very few question marks left when you look at free agency and even heading into an uncertainty of a new CBA.
Mike, there's another injury that might be, you know, keeping Pens fans up late at night, and that's Brooks Orpik. He's one of the team's best defensemen. How close is he to coming back?
Well, Orpik was on the ice last weekend, and he said he was going to try a full practice and see how he was doing, and then after that, he missed a few days in a row of practice, which to me told me he had a little bit of setback or maybe a little bit more soreness. And he's dealing with, he had abdominal surgery in mid-July, and the timetable was originally 6 to 8 weeks. Now we're over 10 weeks past that time, but this is an injury that he actually had the summer before on the other side. And so he knows it's something, again, that he doesn't want to rush. He doesn't want to be dealing with this the entire year. And the latest today from Coach Dan Bylsma was he said that he's playing and hopes he's skating on his own, pushing it pretty hard, and he hopes to finally get back with teammates. But it's like you said, it's something that it's more important to this team than a lot of people give it credit for, because Orpik, look at
quality of competition statistics from last year, he was their shutdown defenseman. And he's also a guy that allows his defensive partner, Chris Letang, to excel and do what he does, which is roaming around the ice. And so he's just very important to the defense, and I think they really want to get him back in the lineup, but not worth rushing him at this point.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're joined by Mike Colligan of Forbes.com and the Hockey Writers. Mike, you mentioned Chris Letang and you know the importance that he has at the on the back end for the Penguins. You know, for our listeners who might not be totally familiar with the game that he plays, you know, can you talk about his sort of evolution into one of the better defensemen in the NHL?
Yeah, you know, he's a guy that always had the raw physical abilities, and actually when he came originally to the Penguins, he took so many chances offensively from the back that he was so confident in his ability to recover and get back that it was almost putting way out of position because he had such confidence in his skating abilities, and that's the biggest thing is I think his skating is second to none among defensemen, maybe a Duncan Keith or some of these guys that are pretty quick, but Letang this year has even taken another step in that skating ability, and every summer he works with a skating coach that he's been working with since I think he was a young teenager, and it kind of, you know, you would think as a player you'd want to be always working on weaknesses, but I remember hearing Guy Boucher, the Tampa Bay coach, last year saying that he wants his players like Steven Stamkos to work on their strengths, and I think that's maybe what Letang has been doing is really his skating has always been his strength, but he's trying to make that better and better, and I think eventually he's going to probably enter the Norris Trophy conversation just for his two-way ability and now what he's doing without Brooks Orpik in the lineup. He's actually playing on the wrong side, the left defensive side, which he's never done as a Penguin, and he's still one of the leading scorers on the team and in the NHL. So a guy that's really becoming a big leader and a big part of the Crosby, Malkin, Fleury conversation when you're talking about the Penguins' core.
Mike, James Neal acquired in a similar deal. Kuznets was acquired, offensive defenseman going the other way for, you know, and more of an up-and-down winger with good hands. Neal has pretty good hands. He's a big body. He seems to have found his way after a concussion derailed him about a season and a half ago. How would you rate his play thus far, and where do you see him fitting in once Crosby's back?
Well, I think the long-term plan is to actually make Kunitz and Neal on Crosby's line, so that would really give Crosby two shooting weapons to finish all those chances that he seems to create. But Neal really struggled last year coming over from Dallas at the trade deadline. He only had one goal in the regular season in about 22 games or so, but this is a guy that's used to scoring 20, 25, 27 goals in early in his career here. So, you know, I think he was a little bit frustrated. I think he was a little caught off guard at the trade last year, and it was just a whirlwind for him with a lot of pressure. This year, he seems like a totally different guy. He's relaxed. He's confident. He's shooting the puck more than anyone else in the Penguins. I think he just had twice the attempted shots of anyone else on the team. And the big thing is, for a pure shooter like Neal, they need space on the ice. And last year he was playing with Alex Kovalev and Mark Letestu, who's more of a checking line guy. But Neal had no room to really get free and get these chances. And now he's with Evgeny Malkin and Steve Sullivan for the most part, two very talented players that draw a lot of attention to them. And it's just leaving Neal in a lot of these prime scoring opportunity areas. And Dan Bylsma, the coach, actually this summer went through every single goal that James Neal had scored. He watched the video and kind of noticed, okay, where are the areas that Neal is usually successful? And I've seen Neal just going to the right side of the net and the high left slot. And those are the areas he's always scored goals in Dallas. And I think now we're seeing it coming into play in Pittsburgh, where he's leading the NHL at four goals. So a good season. I think without Crosby and Malkin in the lineup currently, they need Neal to continue that.
Mike, we'd probably ask you about this anyways because it's been in the media quite a bit, but you know, we're in Winnipeg, and Aaron Asham is from Portage La Prairie, Manitoba, about an hour west. Two nights ago, Aaron Asham got into a fight with Jay Beagle, and some would say he won that fight. yeah. What are your thoughts on, you know, kind of Aaron Asham's little Betty Bye celebration, and do you think this has been overblown a little bit?
Well, you know, it's a debate that I think has a number of levels to it, and first of all, it starts with, you know, the fighting itself, and I think with all the attention on headshots and concussions these days, I know the first thing I thought of when I saw Asham knockout Jay Beagle of the Washington Capitals was, what is this going to mean for Beagle? You know, did he suffer a concussion? Will he be out for years like we've seen David Perron, St. Louis, Crosby, or Mark Savard? And, you know, we never thought of those things in fights a couple years ago, but, you know, that's the first level of it. And then the celebration, the taunting, some people are calling it. Ashram was quick to apologize for that. He realized that that's the type of guy that he is, and from talk to on even on other teams, they're a pretty stand-up guy. It's not, it's pretty out of character for a guy like Aaron Ashram. And it leads to the argument, if we're allowing to fight like this and punch each other and break their jaws, and then they're not allowed to celebrate that, it's just a very complicated question. It leads to, you know, is taunting allowed? Is it over the line? Ashram even compared his taunting to Alex Ovechkin, and when he did that, the hot stick dance where he rubbed his hands over his stick after scoring his 50th goal a couple years ago. And, you know, it's a very complicated question, and I think with all the media attention on the Penguins these days, these things are really going to get blown out of proportion. And I know the Penguins and Ashram are just hoping to kind of put that in the past at this point.
Mike, the Penguins are heading to Winnipeg for a game on Monday. What can fans maybe touch on a little more in terms of, like, to me at least, there might not be a better team in the league that you know, executes their system as well as the Penguins. Can you maybe give our fans a little bit of a preview of what to expect on Monday evening?
Well, I think the if I could boil it down to one word, is speed. And, you know, you hear so many teams these days talking about playing fast and playing speed, and I think the Penguins are as fast as anyone in the NHL, and they've specifically recruited guys that have those characteristics, that are going to win battles, that have the speed, and not only offensively but also defensively. And I think that's a big part of their offense, is getting defensemen involved in the rush and involved in the play to create scoring chances. And I think whether you're talking about Chris Letang or Paul Martin or Matt Niskanen, three of their more offensive defensemen, you're going to see a lot of them in the offensive rushes creating four-on-twos and odd-man breaks. And, you know, Bylsma, I think he won the Coach of the Year last year, and I think that was a big result of just all the preparation that he puts in. And he's one of the hardest working coaches that I've come across as far as a tactical and research and study perspective. And, you know, he always just seems prepared for these teams. And, you know, the Winnipeg Jets are obviously one that he knows from Atlanta. They played them quite a bit in the Eastern Conference, and it's pretty certain that he's going to have something planned for them, and he always seems to pick out those weaknesses. But if you're talking about what to expect from the Penguins, it's speed. It's a relentless forecheck in creating turnovers, and their penalty kill is also something that doesn't get talked about a lot, but was number one in the league last year and has been outstanding so far this year. So those are the few things I would definitely watch.
Mike, last question. You wrote recently about Dan Bylsma pulling the goalie with 4 minutes left and down goals. Can you go through Bylsma's logic for doing so?
Well, he's a student of the game. He's always looking for new ideas and new tactics, and I think now that he's won a little bit and he has a pretty good team, he can afford to think outside the box. And when you're talking about a team that's struggling, a head coach might not want to be pulling the goalie or doing crazy things that might cost him a job or at least put him in a negative light from a fan perspective. But Bylsma's thinking, and he says he went back and did some research on this, is that teams are risk-averse, and head coaches are risk-averse when it comes to pulling the goalie, and they're scared about leaving an open net and allowing the other team to score. But he said from a mathematical standpoint, teams should be pulling their goalie 1 or 2 minutes before they normally would. And there was a preseason game where Bylsma pulled the goalie with a 3 or 3.5 minutes to go to get that attacker. And from a probability and statistics standpoint, supposedly that's the best case scenario, is to get that goal out and give yourself the best chance to score the tying goal. And, you know, I think it's something that permeates through this entire team, whether it's pulling the goalie or new little tactics that people don't notice, that they run some different plays that I think other teams in the NHL are still adjusting to and still picking up. And that's the name of the game in the NHL. You have to be constantly evolving, and I think Bylsma at least has the Penguins at the forefront of that, and that's his goal long-term with this team as well.
Mike Colligan from Forbes.com and the Hockey Writers, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 20 minutes past 2 o'clock. Welcome back to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Old Dutch Foods Game Day coming up at 3 o'clock. Hustler and Lawless live from Glendale, Arizona. I think Hustler might try and defend his comments that he made previously. We might get him on in the next 40 minutes if we have a chance. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com.
Drew, when's the Drew Mandel roast happening?
I'm just going to ask that.
You guys are the ones planning the roast. I'm not planning my own roast.
Well, we tried to plan and then you ate it.
Well, you should know by now not to leave a roast.
That's my first line. That's my first line of the roast.
That's the first line of the roast?
Actually, I have a couple dialed up already.
Have you been writing material?
A little bit. People keep telling me I'm too offensive.
Really?
Yeah.
Like I would be offended, or other people in the audience would be offended?
Richie, it doesn't matter what other people say. I could listen to your jokes all day. I think I'm your number one fan. So as far as being too offensive, I think when it comes to Drew, you can't be too offensive.
Well, I'm troubled if you're concerned that you'd offend me.
You're okay.
I'm not easily
the
offended.
People on the periphery that I'm a little more worried about. And I also wanted the rule that if you come into the building, you're fair game. And people don't like that.
Yeah. And it's just going to be a two-hour, maybe four-hour Drew Mandel roast. We're not roasting other people.
No.
It's going to be four straight hours of a Drew Mandel roast.
True.
Just for hours. And then after, Drew is going to de-invite us to his wedding. So it'll be great.
It's probably true. I mean, that's pretty much exactly how it's going to play out, more or less. But I'm looking forward to that. You're going to have to find a time to set
that
up.
We're doing it at Rumors. We're in negotiations with Sheldon. Yeah. Rumors is obviously booked 7 days a week, but we're in negotiations with Sheldon to get a nice afternoon date.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can get Jeffrey Ross in, and it'll be lots of fun.
Yeah, we need the
I'm surprised you're allowed even anywhere near the property of Rumors.
We need the Roastmaster General to take part in this.
The Roastmaster General?
That would be the best if we get Jeff Ross to your roast.
Yeah, I'm sure that's likely going to happen.
How much do you think it costs?
We know people.
I don't know. You guys have a couple dollars you can rub together. Ezzy, you have a couple dollars.
Just a couple, but I need them.
That's true.
For like parking and...
Yeah. So. Didn't you get your car towed on last week, Ezzy?
Yeah, I don't really want to go into that, but my car was towed from my own work, yes.
Was it?
Because I have...
Otherwise, he wouldn't leave the building. That was the only way to get him to leave.
My parking spot is a couple of blocks. I work downtown. My parking spot's a couple of blocks away, so sometimes I like to park in the parking lot, but I don't have a spot, so I was towed from my own office.
That's
and someone,
weird.
Someone from my office had to take me to the, towing company.
I'm not going
to say which
still?
One. I'm not going to say which one. And get my car. So it was embarrassing, but once again, my life is embarrassing, so it wasn't that big of a deal. This is lots of fun.
Let's talk about the NHL realignment conversation that's been happening this week. There was some talk earlier that it's going to be a very simple, straight Detroit Red Wings to the Southeast Division, Winnipeg Jets to the Central Division trade. But of course, that upsets Columbus, and that upsets Nashville, and that upsets everybody and anything. Does Detroit in the Southeast make any more sense than Winnipeg in the Southeast?
Makes more sense because they're in the East Coast time zone, so in reality they'd be playing all their games in the same time zone.
The only thing, Richie, that makes less sense, let's be honest, there wasn't enough time. Winnipeg's in the Southeast because Atlanta wasn't, and maybe it wasn't enough time, but they're in the Southeast just for 1 year. The only division that maybe would make less sense is if they were in the Pacific Division. But as far as I'm concerned, and James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail, who we've had on many times on the show, is someone who thinks that they should go to four divisions, and I don't know if that necessarily is the best.
The problem with that, Ezzy, is that if you have four divisions, you're going to have one division with less teams than the other one. How are you going to do it?
They were talking about doing
a crossover.
A hybrid.
Like the CFL does. If the fourth place team in Division A is better than the third place team in Division B, you crossover.
My issue with that is if you're playing in a harder schedule, so if you're playing more of your own conference, and you're beating up on each other, and then a team in the weaker conference hops over because they've been playing less competition. You have to be playing the same teams for that to be fair.
I think there's a strong argument that they should keep six divisions. I don't think it's as complicated as people are making it.
Are you telling
me,
though, that you wouldn't enjoy if the first couple rounds of the playoffs were in-division matchups like they were with the Smythe division?
Well, I'm okay with it, Drew. Just you have to make the schedule...
Oh, I think you have to overhaul the schedule completely.
Exactly.
I mean, yes, you have to make sure that it's an equitable schedule at the very least. But, I mean, that would be very
entertaining. I actually like that idea quite a bit with the crossover. You have to work out some of the kinks. But another issue, of course, is if Phoenix moved to Quebec, then what do you do?
That's the other point. Like, they're talking about realignment right now, but who knows where Phoenix is going in a year.
I would swap Winnipeg and Detroit and then... wait until those, you need to figure out a couple other ownership issues right now.
But it's hold on.
If Columbus doesn't go east, like they've been begging for, is that a death knell for the franchise?
No, why?
That's what they say. That's what Columbus's owners would tell you.
Oh, I would tell you what the problem with their franchise is. They haven't had an actual NHL top defenseman since their inception.
Let's be honest, though.
They signed Steve Mason to a terrible contract. Let's talk about the reasons that they're actually bad.
Columbus should want to go to the Eastern Conference.
They do.
The Eastern Conference is, pardon me, they shouldn't look at that as... it's not... I think Timmy's going to get on the microphone here, or maybe he's just adjusting. He's giving me the
Timmy,
the
get on sign. The mic?
As far as I'm concerned... Tim's shy all of a sudden.
What are you doing over there?
Just trying to communicate with Hustler in Phoenix.
Okay.
Whether or not it's four divisions or six divisions, Drew, there's only a few teams that are at debate here. Winnipeg's in the middle of the continent, but just make it work. I mean, it's like this realignment thing. In my opinion, okay, yes, fine, there should be realignment. Detroit should be in the East. You're talking about Columbus. I don't know. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's totally a selfish thing on their part, and maybe they should accommodate them.
Well, but isn't Detroit being selfish, you know, quote-unquote? Detroit's in the Eastern. Like, why should Detroit have any more claim?
Well, Detroit is an original six team that has a lot of power.
Because they're on the East Coast.
But so is Columbus. They're in the Eastern time zone.
Isn't Detroit more east?
Yeah, but fine. But if you're in the Eastern time zone, it's the time zone that matters, not the physical geographical location.
Detroit not paid their dues a little bit more than Columbus has?
Well, what about Dallas? Dallas is in the Central time zone. They've been playing in the Pacific Division for seasons now.
Now, and do I think that you couldn't swap them in Colorado?
Well, but Colorado's in the Mountain time zone.
Right.
So that's a little bit closer is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Drew, I'm sure I'm not the first person to say this. Draw a line down the middle of the continent and put the teams that are on the left side of that line in the Western Conference and the teams that are on the right side of that line in the Eastern Conference.
One or two unhappy teams, but the rest will be okay. I don't know why Dallas in the Pacific when Colorado is right there. It's Colorado's right beside LA, San Jose, Anaheim, and Phoenix. Definitely. Well, I don't know why.
Well, because they'd say they're in the Mountain time zone, so they should be in the same time zone as Edmonton and Calgary.
But Dallas also wasn't complaining about the divisions. I mean, I don't know if they've been good since the division switch.
Oh, yeah. It's been. I mean, when did the division switch happen?
I don't remember.
It was after the. It was before the lockout.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've been good. They've been good. And when they were good, it wasn't an issue.
I think they were probably in these divisions in when they won the cup, weren't they?
I don't remember.
I think it would have had to have been. I can't remember.
Yeah, but it's always an excuse when you're not very good, right? Columbus, you're not very good. That's an excuse. Well, Detroit's been done pretty good with all that travel. It's not necessary, but I think that they are. They should be moving to the. And to be honest,
is it
aside from Chicago? Aside from Chicago, you want original six. You get Detroit, the Rangers, Boston, Montreal, Toronto. Don't you want to see those games?
That's the whole point. Yeah.
Yeah, but is Detroit owed something by the NHL?
I agree. I think they are. Columbus. I mean. Columbus has been in the league for, 12 years, and Detroit has been in the league since it started. So, of course, they're owed something. It's not even, you can't even make that argument. As far as I'm concerned, make it work somehow.
Is the NHL too afraid to think outside the box on the issue of alignment?
No, I'm not so sure about that. They just have a lot of owners that are, you know, crying about what's going on right now, and they're going to have to deal with, Bettman's going to have to deal with that. Obviously, if you made Ilitch a promise, he's not going to double-cross Ilitch. So, there you go. So Ilitch is an issue right there. And then the Jets need to move because it doesn't make any sense. So the Jets make sense in the Central. I mean, St. Louis in the Central time zone, right?
Yeah.
So is Chicago.
Yeah.
So is Minnesota.
Oh, yeah,
there you go. I mean...
Are you at least a bit worried? Are you at least a bit worried about... the Jets not being in the division with the other Canadian teams in terms of how it'll impact them?
Whatever. I don't really care about that.
Okay, then I guess the
I don't. I'm being real. I just as much want to see Chicago. Actually, I want to see Chicago more than I want to see Calgary. So I don't know if that's a minority point of view. But to me, Minnesota is the closest rival. You're going to be driving down for games back and forth. St. Louis is fine. And what about Nashville? They have a complaint, too. They could go to the Southeast Division. So, I mean, there's a lot of issues. But I personally don't really care if we're in the division with Edmonton, Calgary, and Vancouver or not.
You know, one thing, guys, I just want to add real quick. You talk about Gary Bettman making a promise to Mike Ilitch. Bettman said at the press conference, you know, last Sunday at the MTS Center that he doesn't control what the divisions are. The NHL Board of Governors, two-thirds of the teams have to vote in favor of that. So if they don't vote in favor of Detroit, I mean, what's Gary Bettman going to say?
Ilitch has got a lot more pull than
And I was just
going
to say, the Board of Governors is going to lean towards Mike Ilitch if it comes down to that.
I don't even know who Columbus's owner is.
is it McCallum, whatever his name is? I forget what his name is, but...
I promise you, Illich has got a little more pull than
Clemson. It's all politics, Michael, and your points will take him, but it's all politics.
Yeah.
And so what he'll do is, I mean, he's got a minion, right?
Right. Yep. And that's how Bettman can, and that's how Bettman gets away from being in the face of the criticism no matter what happens with realignment. Anyways, let's go to commercial break at this point. You're listening to TSN 1290, Old Dutch Foods, Winnipeg Jets game day. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Previous segment was brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For the best in stand-up comedy and a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Let's talk Mike Richards returning to Philadelphia. Would this game be more important? Not more important. Would it have more spotlight on it if it was happening a little bit later on in the season?
Not really. I don't think so, Drew.
I don't, but do you get the feeling that nobody's talking about this game, aside from us right now?
No, I think people are talking about it.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, you think this is a big, so you think this is a big news story?
It's a big story in Philadelphia.
Mike Richards.
Big story in L.A.
Revenge on his mind?
Absolutely. I think he feels like he was double-crossed by the team. Him and Jeff Carter did not go away on, did not leave Philadelphia on good terms. And I think that I'm interested to see what kind of game he'll have today, because I don't know if there'll be a game he'll be more motivated for aside from his Stanley Cup Final Olympic experiences.
You think him and Pronger might share words another, given that it really does seem that Pronger won that power struggle?
That's a very good question. Very good question.
And you know what? Maybe this isn't getting as much attention because we're in Winnipeg and we're focused on the Coyotes-Jets game. And maybe it would have had a little bit more hype if it was later on in the season or in the middle of the season. But these teams are both completely different. And Richie is right. Mike Richards wasn't probably expecting it, and neither was Jeff Carter. And, you know, Wayne Simmonds is a guy that's going to be playing his old teammates. And, these teams aren't in the same conference. And I think this is going to be... you're right, Richie. And I think that this game... Is there's going to be some rough stuff, and it's going to be a fun game to watch. So I don't know how much national hype it's getting, or I don't know if that matters, but it's going to be a great hockey game with a lot of, you know, personal attachments.
It should get national exposure, I think, in the United States, like a primetime NBC game in the afternoon. But
this seems like a game where, I mean, you have two big markets, Philly and Los Angeles, right? Are two pretty big markets.
That's right.
It just seems like something they could have held back for the NBC and put the big hype machine behind it. You play this game in February.
Problem is, Drew, is that the Kings do one Eastern Conference road trip, really. Probably two. And so they have to map it out in such a way. And remember, I think the Kings are coming back from Europe, right? So they're playing games on the way back from Europe prior to getting back home, so...
I just think this is another opportunity for the NHL to miss out on the hype machine. You play this game in February, where if the NFL's done already, and there's no NBA this season, this is the focus. This is the national game on television and sports in the United States. And you put, Mike Richards, he was the captain of the team, and he was driven out of town by the jealous Chris Pronger. Coming up next on the NHL on NBC.
You mean Gene Okerlund right now?
Well, but you know what? My point is, it's a missed opportunity. They need these opportunities. They don't come around once every now and then. Two marquee cities in the United States that really could have a passion with players who have a passionate dislike for each other, and it's just another game on a Saturday night schedule.
You know what, though? You could make the argument, too, Drew, if you wanted to play devil's advocate, that it's nice to have this game at the beginning of the year because maybe some of the games are a little bit more boring. It's your opinion. It's completely your opinion. I don't follow hockey, or I'm not a fan of hockey based on when games are played, and the schedule is the schedule. We're arguing about something that we have no control of, and you could say that maybe the NHL
has control over it.
Well, yeah, they did have control over it at the beginning of the year, and the game is scheduled when it's scheduled. But maybe let's transition to the game itself as opposed to when it couldn't have been played. And as far as I'm concerned, LA and Philadelphia both look really good. I thought that Philadelphia, I honestly thought Philadelphia might have had a little bit too much change on their roster, but they've impressed me. Jakub Voracek's looked good. You know, Drew Rucker's looked actually pretty good. And
there's a ton of talent on the ice in this game. Don't get me wrong, but that's, even if you don't want to highlight the rivalry aspect or the Mike Richards homecoming aspect, save this game for when you can get you highlight the talent that's on the ice. This is a potential Stanley Cup preview. It wouldn't shock anybody. It wouldn't shock anybody. So you keep it for the Sunday. It's just a missed opportunity for promotion. And the NHL doesn't get very many of these opportunities. Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
And your point is well taken, and I actually agree with you. But I maybe I don't think it's that much of a missed opportunity. It is a missed opportunity, I agree, but maybe not as much as you maybe believe it is. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, that's fine. We can agree to disagree.
Agree to agree?
Yes,
agree to agree.
Okay, there you go. Alan Walsh, player agent.
Can't stand Alan Walsh.
I had a hunch, Richie, when I put this into the show plan that you might have a strong opinion on this.
Can't stand that.
I will now turn over the mic to Richard Pollock.
You're talking about his tweet about Vokoun?
Not so much about Vokoun, about him ripping Shanahan for the suspension.
Yeah, because Alan Walsh is advocating for his own client, and what happens is his client is paying him a percentage of his income. And if there's a suspension, that means he's not paid for certain games, and Alan Walsh gets less money. Alan Walsh is looking out for one person. That's Alan Walsh.
Do you think he's doing a disservice for his clients?
No, he's trying to make money for his clients. Do I think he is? In some senses, yes. Like his comment about Thomas Vokoun, I think that makes Vokoun look bad in the locker room. Is he trying to get his client more time and more money? Maybe, but it might have the opposite effect. Alan Walsh likes one thing. He likes the sound of his own voice. He could take a page out of he could learn a little bit from Don Baisley, a better agent, more qualified and humble, and an able negotiator.
You never failed to disappoint me. I sort of threw that up as a softball over the plate for you there.
That one had been working. I saw that on Tuesday. I was ready to go off. I couldn't wait for Saturday's show. I'm happy that's in the show plan. Can't stand that guy.
Just that much? I mean, is he...
His tweets. Oh, does he have tonight any... we have a shout-out from a player. It's like, okay, we know. We have NHL.com. We know the guy played, and he had a shout-out. I don't care if he's your client. It makes no difference in the negotiation.
Do you think he has any point? Is there any validity to his point regarding suspension? No, not Vokoun so much. Suspensions?
No. No, I don't.
Do you think he's got a point about Vokoun?
No, I don't.
You don't think Vokoun should have been starting over...
Did he play well enough to start? He didn't. Nuveirth outplayed him and got the opening start. And then Vokoun played absolutely awful in the next game.
I want to hear from an agent when he...
I don't want to hear from the agents. That's
okay,
the point.
Okay, hold on. But if I... Okay, let's put it this way. If I have to hear from an agent... I want to hear about his player's contract status or how he signed a contract. He's not a coach. He's not a broadcaster. And, you know, I don't think, even if he's right, or even whether or not he's right or wrong, let's just say that his way about expressing leaves a little bit to be desired.
A little bit would be an understatement, I would suggest there. But, yeah, I mean, I think. Well, let's let's save this for rapid fire, but we might get Hustler on to defend himself instead. Yeah. What do you think about Brooks Leitch's comments about the concussion protocol?
Can I jump in here?
Yeah, please.
Respect the comments, and maybe they came at a time, you know, maybe the interview came at him when he was just a little bit annoyed. But
yeah, it seemed like it.
I'm a little bit undecided because. The quote that he gave that, you know, he's a little bit sick and tired of, there was a few points that he addressed. He said, I think his quote was something along the lines of the NHL players are being babysat a little bit too much. And I don't know necessarily whether I agree or disagree with, because it's a little bit of a blanket statement, really. But the quiet room was I thought it was a little bit odd what he said about that, because as far as I'm concerned, the quiet room is a protocol that I think was... effective and was needed to be put in place. So I kind of respect what he was, how basically he was being candid, but I'm not sure that he kind of seemed like he was trying to speak to NHL players or maybe a sect of the NHL players, and I don't necessarily know that he was speaking for them. It was a little bit odd what he was saying.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, sometimes you have to protect the players from themselves. In a sense, I mean, I don't think you always do. I think that depends on the context. But I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, putting mechanisms in place to make sure the player is okay to go back on the ice.
That's the problem I had with his point. It seemed like I don't think players.
He's probably minimizing concussions, and they've been overblown, and I don't think they have been. But and I think he's frustrated. And to be honest, I mean, it's like players don't make these decisions. That's the reason why.
I mean, it seems like I don't know if I shouldn't say all players, but they don't seem to really get the gravity of the situation regarding a concussion.
Yep. Some do, some don't, and he's one of them who maybe does, but just didn't express himself well. I mean, also, these players, Drew, for all their skills on the ice, aren't necessarily
it's pretty obvious. They're not exactly the most well-spoken. And a lot of times what happens, and I think Don Cherry's included in this, his message gets lost in translation because nobody can understand what the heck they're talking about.
Well, you know, if you read his comments, it made it sound like that Jay Beagle wanted to come back into that game. I mean, if Jay Beagle had been anywhere on...
Jay Beagle apparently the next day didn't have any symptoms. And it doesn't mean because, Drew...
I know.
You know a lot of people who get in fights in real life, who get fights, they get knocked out, or they get punched in the face, and they're okay the next day. I mean, not every punch to the face means you're going to get a concussion. Not every hit concussion. It happens. It's, you know, case by case. But to be a little bit more cautious doesn't hurt anybody.
Right, and Richie, you know
and
what?
Believe me, Jay Beagle coming into the game or not doesn't matter, because Jay Beagle's not going to be the difference between that team winning and losing any games.
No, of course not. Go to commercial break. When we come back on the other side, Hustler's going to defend his comments. You're listening to Old Dutch Foods Game Day on TSN 1290. One final segment. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This is Old Dutch Foods Game Day, and we're thrilled to be joined live from Jobbing.com Arena in Glendale, Arizona, by an ex-Winnipegger now, Andrew Hustler Patterson. Welcome to the program.
What's going on, boys?
You really know how to stir up some controversy.
Fired up in 140 characters, huh?
Man, I just assumed that that was some leftover vitriol from your night out on the town last night.
No, not at all. The funny thing was, I was listening to you guys talking about it, and I think it was Richard's comment about that they should have. You guys were talking about the opening game, and that maybe. By the way, if who's ever back there, I'm hearing myself twice, so you might want to just tweak that if you can. It's getting a little crazy. Thank you. He was talking about.
Well, what do you think yourself?
That's actually not the studio. That's just you, Hus.
he was talking about the opening night and that, it was sort of, I think you referred to it as low-key and wanted some of the old Jets to be coming out. And I guess I put out a tweet that, the NHL history of the Jets was, I guess my term might have been a little strong, a complete embarrassment. But what I meant was, from a fan's standpoint of view, I mean, guys, I was at a minimum of 35 games a year for about the last 10, 11 seasons.
Right.
I worked for the club.
Yep.
I sold season tickets. The lack of support in this city and the way that Winnipeg took that team for granted, in my mind, was a complete embarrassment. I mean, we barely had 5,000 season tickets in the last couple of years of the franchise. The thing that angered me the most was consistently going to the arena and seeing the visiting team have large pockets of fans that actually were from Winnipeg. These weren't people traveling to go there. So in the 15 years that the team has left, the amount of revisionist history that's gone on around here is frankly unbelievable. And maybe it's a good thing. I mean, I think a lot of it contributes to the incredible passion for the team right now. But to look back at those years and think that it was basically just like it is right now, is just patently false. And for that reason, I think that, that opening night was all about the new Winnipeg Jets. And full props to the guys at True North. I mean, I was actually kind of surprised that they did have all that old Jet stuff in, that intro video, which I thought was perfect. I thought they did it very well. But, to make it some sort of a retro night, to me, was totally the wrong time to do that. And obviously, if people maybe took that the wrong way, I apologize. I mean, no one was a bigger fan than myself. It's one thing to, you put your life into that, going to all the games and working for the club and losing a job. It's a time, I don't even like to think back to those days, to be honest with you. But honestly, it should make us that much more thankful what we have right now.
Okay, I think the fiery mob that was about to lay siege to the Red Cactus has stopped as a result of your apology.
I realize people are passionate about it, but I mean, I always joked for the last 15 years that there's 50,000 people walking the streets of Winnipeg that'll tell you that they were at the last game. There's 20,000 people that said, I had season tickets. Well, guess what? That's just not the case. And we need to embrace this new team, the new culture of the Winnipeg Jets as our own. And I think because we lost the team, we didn't have an NHL hockey for 15 years, people realize what they lost. And we don't want to repeat the same mistakes that we did before in regards to supporting our team.
I just don't think, I just don't know why they're so mutually exclusive. I mean, let me ask you this. If not for the past of the Jets, would there be a team here as of Sunday?
I mean, who knows? I mean, really, I mean, if Mark Chipman and David Thompson built that arena and, we had that, it had nothing to do with the fact that there was a team there before, I think. It was the fact that, well, I put it this way, I'm not going to say that it didn't assist it, but that on its own is not the reason why we have an NHL team back in Winnipeg. It's because we have owners, we have a building, and we have a great hockey market.
I think a point that Richard made earlier is that, you know, you have to look at the Jets' attendance numbers in context to the rest of the league.
I have them up here. I mean, the Jets in 93-94 averaged 13-20, you know, 297 a game. The Oilers averaged 13-478. I mean, were the Oilers a bad fan base in 93-94? I mean, 94-95, the Oilers had 13-124 a game. The Jets had 13, so they had the exact same, 13,013. And the Oilers were riding.
All I'll say is on this, and I mean, I have no idea on what some of these other markets were. And for sure, I don't dispute at all that the fan culture of hockey in Canada has really come a long way in 20 years. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And frankly, we saw it explode while we were on the sidelines, watching all these other cities become really passionate about their team. I guess it just at the end of the day, I was just thinking about, you know, how lucky we are to be going in the new direction. And really, I mean, let's face it, guys, underneath all of this, this is part of the reason why there was such passion to call the team the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, we've talked at length. I mean, when the first team was coming back, I was one of the people that said, God, no, let's not. I mean, I don't want to go back to those days. But it really opened up my eyes, and obviously the people that really matter, Mark Chipman and the folks at True North Sports and Entertainment, with how tied people were to the name Jets and wanting to go back to it. But there's a lot of rose-colored glasses in our city right now, and frankly, I don't want to spend a lot of time looking back. I want to look forward to hopefully our team getting their first win tonight at the Jobbing.com Arena where we are right now.
I agreed with you there. I personally am looking forward to the Pollock and Lawless show that's going to debut on TSN 1290 on
I've
Monday.
I've been saying that for 5 months now that it should be Hustler on a Legal Curve. Let's make a one-for-one trade.
Has Gary stopped driving the bus over Ezzy after yesterday's comments Rebecca Sanders?
Huss, you BBM me about Rebecca Sanders and my crush for her, which, by the way, I'm going to say on the air right now is 100% true. I was at work and couldn't hear it, so I don't know. Maybe I can get the audio from Rack or Tim or something like that, but I appreciate that you guys shouted me in the, shouted me out.
If you ever do meet her, she's well aware of your fawning over her. And I have to admit, she made a couple fans yesterday, without a doubt. Very nice to meet her in person.
What's the mood like down there, Huss?
Well, you know what? I mean, we just came over from the hotel.
From the hospital where Huss is getting his stomach pumped.
Hospital. That's where I spent the evening. Just popped by and hooked up with Gary, walked over with he and Tim Campbell. They're just shooting something for the Winnipeg Free Press right now.
Cool.
But there's a ton of fans here now. When we were here yesterday afternoon, you really didn't see too many. Late last night, kind of in the last couple hours that the establishments were open in Westgate, you started seeing more Jets fans coming up. But this morning, I mean, it is everywhere. Back at the hotels, anywhere in and around this area, you see people rocking the new logo of the Winnipeg Jets, and people are fired up. I know Gary's been talking to fans for a piece for the Free Press tomorrow, I would imagine, for about the last hour, and he's going to be doing some more stuff with fans in and around it. And I'm looking forward to going and hooking up some of my fellow Jets fans as soon as this two-hour Hustler and Lawless is done, and we turn it over to Rick Ralph.
What do you guys have in store for us?
We have a big show. Tim Campbell's going to join us to talk more about this somewhat historic game between the new Jets and the artist formerly known as the Winnipeg Jets. Ed Willis from the Vancouver province is going to join us. Craig Morgan from Fox Sports Arizona will pop in. Munzee and Dennis Bayak will pop in as well. Sarah McClellan from the Arizona Republic. And then Shane Knight is going to pop in with me for about the last 15, 20 minutes and take her home to the last hour of pregame coverage with Rick Ralph before Dennis, Brian, and Shane give you what will hopefully be the call of the Jets' first win.
Is Knighty looking as dapper in the 100-degree Arizona weather as he usually does in the MTS Center press box?
The dude is a million U.S. tax-free 24/7, 365.
Hey, Huss, I know you guys are going to talk about this probably on H&L coming up shortly. On a Legal Curve, we said there's probably 2,500 plus fans. Is that accurate? Are there that many Jets fans there?
Really hard to say, I mean, until we actually get into the building, but it wouldn't shock me at all. I mean, we were sitting here yesterday with Tom Brown, who was doing the opping for us, that works for a local station here, and I mean, the fact that they were putting out that there was a very few tickets remaining led him to believe that there was a ton of Jets fans coming, because the matter of the fact is that the Coyotes don't fill this building very often in the regular season. We've seen a ton of them today. The number is very hard to put on it, but if I had to, make an estimate, I'd say there might be in excess of 2,000 Winnipeg Jets.
So it's in the thousands, not just the hundreds. That's unbelievable.
Oh, I would, for sure. I have personally seen probably, 300-400 in and around just in the last few hours in a very short travel spot. So I'd be shocked if there were less than that. Then I think you will see. I guess this game's on Hockey Night in Canada tonight. When you're watching the game back from Winnipeg, you'll see large throngs of people rocking the Winnipeg Jets merch and cheering on the visitors tonight at Jobbing.com Arena.
We'll look forward to hearing from you and Lawless coming up right after us here on TSN 1290. Huss, enjoy the game, bud. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Great show. And, maybe if only there was more than 140 characters, I could have avoided all of this.
Exactly right.
The new Twitter will let you.
Thanks, Huss. Andrew Hustler-Patterson from Jobbing.com Arena. That's it for us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show today. Big thank you to Tyson Nash, color commentator for the Phoenix Coyotes. Big thank you to Paul Waldy of the Globe and Mail. And big thank you to Mike Colligan of Forbes.com and the Hockey Writers for joining us. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. The website is www.illegalcurve.com. Twitter at illegalcurve. Facebook.com/illegalcurve. Next Saturday, 9 a.m. start time here on TSN 1290. We're on early leading up to the bomber kickoff, and of course the Jets Hurricanes game next Saturday. Lots of action. Stay with us. Hustler and Lawless are next here on TSN 1290. Thanks for listening. Good afternoon, Winnipeg.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk. Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.